We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Rob Osgood says, looking like June is going to be a busy month with recruits. Great intel on the IB board. Got to check it out. It's worth it. I agree, Rob. Mm-hmm. I agree. A lot of good stuff today. Sean Kane asks, what offense, Ryan, I'll kick this over to you. Yep. What offense on Notre Dame's schedule not named Ohio State matches up best with the Notre Dame defense? I wouldn't say OSU or USC because their O-line will get destroyed. That's a good question. So which offense matches up best against Notre Dame from a negative standpoint for Notre Dame, right? So whose offense should give Notre Dame the toughest matchup? That's a really good one.
That is a really good one. I'm looking up the
I'll be honest with you. I need to see who ends up starting at quarterback.
Okay.
But I think a case could be made that it could be North Carolina. Just their line, I have similar issues, but Josh Downs is a dynamic player that's every bit as dynamic, if not more so, than Mario Williams. The reason I say the quarterback, Ryan, because the one thing that has been a bit kryptonite to Notre Dame is a mobile quarterback. Mm. And depending on who wins that job, there's a chance they could have a very mobile quarterback on that roster. And we saw what happened last year with a guy like Sam Howell, who's not necessarily a great runner. I mean, good runner, good athlete. But he worked Notre Dame running the ball. So as I look at him, like, give me a team that has a quarterback that can do damage with his legs. That's not really – I mean, Caleb can run. Caleb's a good runner. I mean, but he's not a guy that I'm like, wow, he went out and ran for 100. You know, I don't see that. But if North Carolina, depending on who starts a quarterback, it could be them. I think the other one would be, is there a team that can be big and physical and control the clock? BYU would be another one that I would think about in that regard.
BYU's so, interesting.
Yeah.
They're interesting.
They got a good quarterback coming back as well.
Yeah, Jaren Hall is a pretty good quarterback in his own right. You know, the team that I think is going to be a little bit of a pesky team. So this is the team that I wanted to mention real quick with Syracuse, honestly, because that you mentioned the
Schaefer
quarterback. He can run. They have a good running back in Sean Tucker. And I actually just watched their left tackle, Matthew Bergeron, recently. He's a dude, man. Yeah. He's pretty good. He's a draftable player next year. So
their best receiver left. That would be my only thing there is I just don't think they have enough in the pass. See, they're the opposite of the other teams we're looking at, right? Like USC and North Carolina. It's like, can they do well enough in the trenches to give them their name problems? Like, and we would both agree that North Carolina in the 7-on-7 is going to give problems because they got some athletes over there, receiver. Same with USC, but the line is the question mark. Mm-hmm. With Syracuse is the exact opposite. With BYU, the exact opposite. Like, does BYU have the athletes on the perimeter to give Notre Dame problems? They've got the quarterback in the lines, I think. Syracuse, same way. That Syracuse offensive line was sneaky solid last year. I mean, Sean Tucker had a really good year, and he didn't do it all by himself.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the left tackle was a good player, man. Yeah. Like, I think I put like a fourth round grade on him. He's a pretty good player. He's a Canadian kid, and like I said, the Garrett Schrader kid that was at Mississippi State at one point, he's a really good athlete, man. He's a big kid, too. He's like 6'4", 220-something. Like, I think off that Reed game, especially because Notre Dame's going to have some defensive ends next year that you're going to be like, yes, I want to get their ears pinned back a little bit. running that read option that they're going to run out there in Syracuse, I think can slow them down just a little bit. So I just think that element of that inside zone, zone read kind of situation that Syracuse is probably going to be running a lot, I think that can give you a little bit of a tough time. Yeah. Like it's going to make you think, if anything else. There's going to be a lot of moving parts to it.
Sure. I think another part, another team I'd say is if BC would have had a couple of those linemen that could have come back, like Tyler Vrabel, I still can't believe he went pro early. That made no sense to me.
And then he went undrafted.
You'd think with his dad that he would have a little bit better guidance than that, unless he just didn't want to be in college anymore. That was odd to me.
It was really odd. Yeah.
But, I mean, skill-wise, BC's got some dudes coming back. I mean, Zay Flowers is, you know, in the conversation of who's the best receiver that Notre Dame's going to face this year. I don't know if I'd go with Zay, but he's in the conversation. That's for sure. Yeah. You know, George Takis is a good football player. They've got other good receivers. I mean, I think Jalen Gill's still there.
Jalen Gill, yeah.
The running back they have went for over 1,000 yards. Yeah, he went for over 1,000 last year. And of course,
I will say this:
they got some athletes.
Yeah, and they might be losing 4 out of 5 offensive linemen, but I mean, traditionally Boston College develops offensive line pretty well, and the one that they do have coming back, Christian Mahogany, is a really good guard. Good, so he's a good football player. Yeah. So yeah, I think Boston College, Zay Flowers is going to give you a lot of tough matchups on the outside, but or even in working in the slot a little bit too. But I just don't know. Like, Jalen Gill is a good player. They have another wide receiver who's a taller kid who's a solid player. But I don't know if they have anybody else outside of Flowers that's going to stress you from an athleticism
perspective. See, here's where I'm going to somewhat disagree with you on that. I think that they have guys that, to me, can give you problems because you have to focus on Zay Flowers. And you have to focus on their 6'5", 240-pound quarterback who scrambles all around, and then you lose contain and he throws it over your head. Like, it's that kind of stuff with BC that scares me more than just Phil sitting back and picking you apart and hitting this receiver, that receiver, this receiver, the other receiver, to your point, right?
Yeah.
I think when you factor in the specifics of that offense, do they have three guys that if you put Bryce Young back there would scare me? No. That part I somewhat agree with. I think they've got some good players. I wish CJ Lewis would have come back. I would have liked to see him come back and develop.
Was he not back?
No,
I thought he was back.
No, he transferred. He maybe he came back, but he entered the portal. I like Jaden Williams, the freshman they had last year, and again George Takis. I think there's some good solid players there, especially with the fact that you have Phil Dracovic. Because again, all those guys that we could talk about are guys that if you lose contain because you're focused on Phil running around, just like we saw 2 years ago in this matchup, he can hurt you. And I think the addition of George Takis is something to consider as well there as also. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I don't want to go too much into Boston College, but I look forward to the preview of that going into the week, because I'd be really interested to see cornerback-wise what they do there. I mean, because I think most people are going to say, you know, do you just put your best corner Cam Hart on a guy like a Zay Flowers? But I think like a Tariq Bracey would be a really interesting matchup against a Zay Flowers.
Because he can run with him.
Style perspective.
Yeah, he can run with him. That's the only kid that we know of right now that can run with him.
Yep.
So, yes, that's a very, very interesting point, Ryan.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Irish Gordian Knot. Who was your childhood favorite player? Mine was Tom Zbikowski. So he just kind of aged himself. So he's a younger Notre Dame fan. That's kind of how you know how old people are. So who was your favorite player when you were a kid? And it's like, okay, well, you're young or you're old. What about you, Ryan? Who's your favorite?
Man, I'd be curious to
hear. While Ryan's thinking, I want to hear everybody else's too. I always love these conversations because sometimes you get the most random player. Like, that guy was your favorite player? Like, on that team, you know, Ned Bolkar was your favorite player, like of really, like, you know what I mean? Which is really fun to have those conversations. But yeah, who would your favorite player be, Ryan?
My answer may have been Tom Zbikowski as well.
He
was really good player, man. What was that one game where he just like let the punt bounce forever and then he scooped it up late and took it
was
back?
It North Carolina.
It may have been, man. That one like stays with me for some reason. He was just such a tough player. Like, he was just so much fun to watch. I liked him a lot. You know, I really liked this kind of a random one, I guess. I really like John Carlson. I don't know why.
Okay.
John Carlson. He was a really good tight end. But
yeah, he was. So is Anthony Fasano just a little bit too
No, I remember the Fasano year, man. Fasano was my dad's dude because he got drafted to Miami, right? And my dad's a Miami Dolphins fan.
And he was a jerk. He loves right? Fasano. So yep. That's another reason I thought you'd be a – Fasano guy.
Yeah, I liked Fasano. I mean, I loved Brady Quinn. I loved Darius Walker. I loved that whole, early Charlie team. Like, that was a really good
football
team.
Brady was clearly my favorite player from that team. But my favorite player growing up was Rocket Ismail. And my close second was Tony Rice. And my favorite defensive player on that team was Todd Light. So he just, you know, the big old shoulder pads and playing corner and hitting people. And
Yeah. You know who else I liked? Random one. So, well, not sort of random. He was one of the best players on that team, but Derek Landry was a really good defensive tackle, man. He was so good.
Yeah, he was really good. He was him and Trevor Laws were a really, 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 really big, really, really good interior group. There's no doubt about that.
Jared Grace. And Duke Way as well. Yes. Shouldn't have been the Duke Way.
Speaking of former favorite Notre Dame players, my guy Jared Grace. Happy Friday, y'all. Listening to Irish Breakdown to relax before a big exam tomorrow. Nothing better. My man. Appreciate that very, very much, Jared. And good luck. Jared is trying to become, I believe, a doctor. So, which means he's a lot smarter than us. So, and I'm not afraid to admit it. Irish Gordian Knot, what do you think of the idea of having a jeweled shalala as our turnover chain? The leprechaun would hold it and run over to the sideline and hand it over and do a jig with the player.
I don't like the turnover chain stuff, man. Like, I don't need that. I just don't.
Good answer.
Yeah. I'd like, we're always going to tap the sign on the way out. Sure. I don't need any little gimmicky thing during the game. I just don't.
If they were to, the only thing I would be okay with is if they did something where a Notre Dame creed or motto was on a sign. And when you have a big play or a stop, you hit the sign. It's kind of like following a tradition that already exists. But I just like, okay, so Miami started the turnover chain. So now everybody's got to try to be like Miami. It's just Notre Dame. You don't need to be like Miami. Be Notre Dame. Set a trend. Do something that's more team related. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I'd rather see something like that, Ryan, then a turnover chain. We're on the.
I agree. You know, Ryan, I know I'm a very random person sometimes. I think it's my ADHD that kicks in, but I just wanted to put a real quick random note for a former Notre Dame player that was just in the chat. We just had Carlisle Holiday, someone put in there.
Nice.
Did you know that when Brett Favre broke the record for most completions in a career, it was to Carlisle Holiday
playing wide receiver? I did not know that. I knew he played receiver for the Packers. I had no idea that he was the guy.
That was him, man. Yep, I remember that vividly. He caught it. I was like, oh, wow, that's Carlisle Holiday. That's so cool. Yep.
That's really fun. I remember how big of a recruit he was coming out of high school. Like, I mean, that was such a big win for Notre Dame. In a year, they signed three quarterbacks. It was him, it was Jared Clark, and Matt LaVecchio. And Matt LaVecchio is the guy that ended up starting as a freshman. It was so, so odd. But I loved Jared Clark's film. He was so athletic. He just was raw, and they didn't coach him up at all. But he was a really good player. We'll get down here to some more questions. We got a lot of great ones here today, y'all. Appreciate you guys all so much. You guys and gals all so much. Matt, 2011 GT with a super chat. This may have already been discussed, but can you confirm the Mpemba has set up a visit to Notre Dame? I know that Tom Loy has reported that he's visiting the 17th or the 19th. I have no reason to doubt Tom on that, but we haven't been able to confirm that. And the only time we put things on our board is if we can confirm. It's a bad business to start confirming, like just reporting things that other people have done, no matter how much you may like or trust or think that they're correct. That's just not how we do it. So unfortunately, we haven't had a chance. We are working on it. We've been working on it for a few days. Actually, we've been working on it for a while, but he's not responsive. So we've got some other people trying to help us with that as well.
But if you go on the board, there's a lot of other players.
A lot of other ones. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Wade Garrett with a super chat. We have confirmed that Jaden Osbury will be on campus June 10th. And that's the one for me. People talk about favorite players. That might be my favorite player in the 2022-3 class. Like just like favorite, like not best or most important. Just there's just something about that kid. I love that kid on film, right? And then you hear him talk and you're like, man, this kid's like sharp. And then you hear about his academic, you know, desires, and you're like, this is like to me the kind of kid we should be promoting as like the face of what college athletics is supposed to be about.
I feel that
tremendous football player, great student. Like there's just something about that kid. I like underdogs, right? Like not that he's an underdog, he's a top 50 national recruit, but like he doesn't have that physical profile of what you know the elite guys have. You know, he's not that toolsy 6'4", 230 athletic guy. He's just a football player. It's why Jonathan Vilma was always one of my favorite non-Notre Dame players. Like based on measurables, that kid had no business being an elite player. None. Yep. But he was an elite player. He was a really good player, especially in college.
We should in the NFL draft space, there's a big thing about calling people your like my guys, our guys, like those are our guys in the cycle. We should do that, man. Because I mean, I'm just thinking like Jaden Greathouse, Monroe Freeling. Those are my guys this cycle. They're my guys.
Well, you've been on the Greathouse thing for a while. Yeah, that's fun. Like just kind of like pick our – we should do a show like our five favorite recruits in this class. Not best, but just five favorites. Yeah. Just got – for whatever reason, I mean, I just love watching this kid play.
I love that.
Dante Moore's in that one for me. We'll have to think about that. Like just the ones that pop my head. Jaden Greathouse is another. And then Keon Keeley. I remember when I first watched him, I was like, oh my gosh, this kid is so good. When they first offered him, I was like, they got to get this kid.
Jason Moore is another for me.
Dude. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man, that kid is he's that really kid's a freak.
Good. He's really good. And he's fun to watch. He's like, you know, it's just like, man, this kid's got so much tools and
a motor.
Yes, absolutely. Patrick Tolan, best favorite player. Thank you for the super chat. Pat Koontz. So that's like I said, random players always have these random guys. Wade Garrett with a super chat. Hi guys, sorry if you've talked about this before, but what is the time frame for Logan Diggs to be out from his surgery? Will he miss time this season? Notre Dame has not confirmed what his time is, Ryan. They have not said when it will be. I have simply looked up what the time frame normally is for a torn labrum. And if I remember correctly, it is 4 to 6 months.
I've torn both labrums in my shoulder. I think mine was about 6 months. That was a long time ago at this point, but just from a general sense.
Six to eight months, is what it is. So I just looked that up. 6 to 8 months to be fully back and ready to go, which would, you know, surgery happen in what, early May, late April, So that would put him out into the season. But again, that's just us going off of what the medical things that I've read about the time frame. We don't know the severity of it. We don't know if it was a full tear, a part. Because if it's just like, no, because it's like a, you know, like I had a torn rotator cuff, but it was like a small one and I could play through it. And then there's some where like, no, you're not playing through that because you can't lift your arm. You know, it just depends on the severity of it. So I don't want to report that it is 6 to 8 months or that he will miss time. We're not saying that because Notre Dame has not told us that. We don't know those specifics. We're just simply saying normally on a normal tear, this would be the time frame that he'd be out. I just want to make sure that we're clear on that. Want to also be clear on something else. Scott Yerbick says, what time is Sullivan Absher committing today? 4 o'clock. We will have a show at 4 o'clock as well. We will be there to carry his announcement. We'll talk about what it means for Notre Dame one way or the other afterwards and have a good fun show. So you're going to want to be back for that as well. Let's get back to some more questions. Here we go. We already got that one. Irish Gordy Knott also says, what do you think of the idea Oh, we asked that one too.
Yes, we did. Yep.
Place, and I forgot to delete those. I can use a little help there, assistant over there.
Right? I got you. I got
you. You take them out after I ask them, so I don't look like an idiot and bring up three questions. Already had. It's your job here. Like, what would you say?
Sorry.
You do here?
Sorry.
Make sure I don't look like an idiot.
I'm the chat guy. I'm the chat guy. I got you.
I'm finding the questions. You take them off when I've asked them. So I'm kidding, obviously. John Leahy says, "Will we see the February signing day become relevant again, or will most classes be signed by the early signing day?" I think everything, John, is cyclical, right? Like, there's going to be something that happens, some rule where you're going to get, I don't think we're ever going to see February be like the mass recruiting signing period until it changed, the rules change. Like, if they were to go to a summer signing, which is what I think. How is it an early signing period when it's a month and a half before the normal signing period? That makes no sense to me. Right. So it just seems dumb. I personally mm-hmm. think a signing day should be like a late July. So all these kids that are committed and are like, I don't want other schools calling me. I don't want this. I don't want that. I just want to commit and sign and be done with it. I think that should be end of July, to be honest with you. They start high school season. Teams are going to start camp. It's over with. And then have the next one be February. Unless they make a rule change like that, John, we're just not going to see February be the mass thing that it was. But I think what you're going to find is if NIL continues to be a part of the enticement, you're going to start seeing more and more big name kids waiting because they're going to let all those kids get off the board and then it becomes a bidding war. Okay, I'm the last 5-star quarterback standing. Who wants me? You know?
It's a good point, and it's a troubling point though too. I mean, it's going to be fascinating to watch whoever that last big name quarterback on the board is, and see if that's like what big of an impact that is. It's a great point. It really is. I think for Notre Dame, it's not going to matter as much as far as the February signing day. Like I feel like for and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, Brian, but I feel like Notre Dame gets their class pretty early. Typically, it seems like, right. And there's not usually like a lot of uncertainty heading into that final day. So, but I think you did also make a good point. A month and a half spring out of the two signing days is very odd. I agree. I feel like it should be like a 6-month difference, 4-month difference, like something that's a little more substantial than a month and a half. It just doesn't seem like enough separation.
Right. I agree. John Murray, who do you feel are the most effective tacklers in the Notre Dame secondary, corners, and safeties? Well, I think Brandon Joseph, if he gets back to being the guy he was in 2020, is a very good tackler. I mean, he missed a lot of tackles last year, but he was playing out of control a lot more last year because he had.
Yeah, he's not like a heavy hitter, but he's just a really solid wrap up tackler. Yeah, I agree. I think Cam Hart has high upside as a tackler. Like, he makes some tackles where you're just like, wow, that's. It needs to get more consistent, but there's some high level tackles on his film for a corner.
One of the concerns I have about this defense is the fact that I can't just sit there and say, boy, of these really good tacklers, I mean, Houston Griffith hasn't been a good tackler. DJ Brown is good if he can get his hands on you, but he's just not good in space.
Yep.
Ramon Henderson has been good in limited time, but it's just not enough knowing him. Mm-hmm. Xavier Watts is a pretty good tackler. He's a guy that's been a good tackler. You know, Tariq Bracey's an underrated tackler. He's just not real big, so he can get kind of trucked. But like when he was outside of like a couple game stretch in 2020 when he'd kind of lost it, Tariq's a solid tackler. He's not strong, so sometimes he gets a little bit engulfed in blocks. But when he has to tackle in space, Ryan, I think he's a pretty good tackler. Clarence Lewis is an okay tackler. I think he'll take a jump this year. Because we forget he was just a sophomore last year. He's a young kid still.
He's solid in the run game. Yeah, it's not bad.
He'll get better as he gets older and stronger because he's a willing tackler. That's the thing about Clarence. He's a willing tackler. And I think now with more experience and all that, I think it's good. Here's a good question go ahead, Ryan. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, so would you agree to the fact of, like, let's say the top three tacklers right now in the secondary? My answer would be Cam Hart, Brandon Joseph, and Tariq Bracey. Would you agree with that, or would you disagree? For their position, obviously, the safety should be a better tackler than a corner, right?
Yeah, like kind of, yeah. I'd say I'd want to think more about Lewis versus Bracey, but my initial reaction would be say yes. Sure. Yeah. Especially when you consider factors, you know, like Cam being a corner in his first year. But yeah, outside of that play against Virginia Tech, I thought Cam was a really, because part of being a good tackler to me, and this is the reason that I hesitate with Tariq, because if Tariq's not being blocked, he's a really good in-space tackler. And that's not meant to be an insult. It's like, because some guys aren't. DJ Brown's not. I mean, he's not elusive. He takes bad angles. He just, in the past, hasn't been a good tackler. Hopefully that changes. But the problem with Tariq is Tariq struggles to get off blocks. I think Clarence does a better job of block destruction because he's just bigger and stronger than Tariq is. So if Clarence can become better at the point of the football, I think he could get past Tariq. But as far as just when they arrive at the football, Tariq's, yes, is in that conversation, if that makes sense. So, yes, we'll see. We'll see. Here's a good one I've been waiting on people to ask. Saw that the ACC is thinking of about a 3-5-5 schedule. How will this affect Notre Dame? So is it 3-3-5, right? Isn't it a 3-3-5 schedule? I could be wrong. But basically, the point is they're going to get rid of the proposal is to get rid of divisions, and then you have like three rivals that you play all the time. Here, let me pull it up and read what they have. Let me just find it here real quick, because it's a 3-5-5. Okay, it is a 3-5-5. Still thinking defense. Okay, so it says here that the proposal is a scheduling model in which league teams would play three permanent opponents, so it'd be like rivals, then rotate through the rest over a 2-year period, 5 1 year, 5 the next. So it's basically trying to get more teams on your schedule more consistently, which I'm fine. I think that's smart. I hate the fact that Bama and Georgia almost never play in the regular season. It's stupid. And it's done on purpose. It's a way to manipulate your schedule to where your best teams don't play the best teams from the other league. Like, I'm trying to remember Ohio State and Iowa. Mm-hmm. Let me look this up, because that's another one that I've always wondered, like, well, that's kind of weird, but like, why don't they ever play more often in the regular season? Right. So the last time that they played was 2017, a game that Iowa won 55-24. They've had some really good games before then. Ohio State had a 10-point win in 13, 3-point win in 10, 3-point win in 09. Like, they've had some competitive games. 04, Iowa beat them. And Iowa's a consistently good team in the West, and they never have to play Ohio State. So literally, since Brian Kelly became the head coach at Notre Dame, to give you how long that's been, Ohio State and Iowa played three times. Mm-hmm. That's it. So Ohio State gets the duck, arguably the best program, second best program in the West in a 12-year period. They only got to play them three times, right? I don't love that. I don't think that's how it should be. And I just think you should see teams more often. Maybe you don't play as many teams as much, because that's the thing is, in the divisions, you're going to play six teams every year. Mm-hmm. It's now getting rid of how many teams you play every year. So, you know, that's something, Ryan, that I'm attracted by that notion.
Yeah.
But it would there's still some kinks I think you'd have to work out a little bit, in my opinion.
I love the fact that there's the three inherent rivals that are kind of locked in every year. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. As long as we're not compromising those, that's an inherent thing in college football, is you love those rivalries, right? So as long as you're inherently keeping that, and then I don't see any harm in rotating the schedule at all. I mean, because you're going to see different matchups, and that'll also sell, you know, is seeing teams that don't play as often maybe as they typically do. So yeah, I love that proposal personally. I mean, I'm trying to like stretch my mind a little bit for like the big drawbacks of it. And I'm not finding too much. I think that I think there's a lot of positives to it.
I think the drawbacks are, is if you're not doing home and homes, you run the risk of there being some disadvantages of you played a team when they were at their best at their place, and then you didn't get them again until a couple years later at your place, and it was a different team. They're not as good. You missed them when you had the great year. I always kind of like the idea of playing the same, you know, in conference, you know, like when you're doing a non-conference schedule, you know, kind of having that home and home. but it's a conference schedule, so it's a little bit different. So I think that would be the only drawback, but it's not like a huge drawback for me. You know, and you wonder, how can you make it work to have, you know, 14 to 16 teams in a conference and not have divisions? And I think this is a way to try to make it work, you know, and then you're playing 8 conference games and you still have all your room for your 4 non-conference games. So it's a very interesting. And my understanding is it doesn't impact Notre Dame's schedule with them at all, because number one, the ACC is not willing to pay Notre Dame that big of a fine for getting out of their scheduling thing, but it doesn't change the number of conference games at all. Right. So like the only way it would maybe impact Notre Dame is if the ACC went to a 9-game conference schedule. They may say, like, we got 9 games plus 5 teams a year already have Notre Dame built in. It's not changing anything in regards to when they would play conference games, how many conference games they would play. It just changes who they're going to play in conference. So it has no impact on Notre Dame at all. It won't have any impact on like non-conference, like non-conference like rivals. So like it won't have any impact on Clemson versus South Carolina, Georgia Tech, games like that. It won't impact at all, I don't believe. It just means, okay, so you don't play the same 6 teams in your division every year. You're only going to play 3, and then the rest is going to be more of a, you know, a mix up. So it'll be interesting. And then the other thing I don't necessarily love about it is I have to look more into the 5-5, but is it the same 5 every other year? Like, I just would need to know more about it, because then that could have some issues as well. Like, okay, so you're that team that gets stuck in it every other year. You've got to play Clemson, Florida State, Miami, you know, and Louisville all in the same year, right? Like, how you're going to mix that group up. And, you know, it's be kind of interesting to see how all of it plays out. But good questions on that. Tyler, is it possible we land CJ Carr and Julian Sain?
No. I mean, that's about as unlikely as I would say as a proposition. Yeah. I mean, both kids are highly ranked players at this point. I mean, they're top 100, top 50 caliber quarterbacks, you know, basically by every platform. And I mean, some people have, you know, both those guys in 5-star status in a couple different platforms. So Now, very unlikely. I think you're one quarterback in the next year's cycle is more than likely. Maybe there's a throw in, you know, potential guy, but not too highly ranked kids like that. Very unlikely.
Here's a question. Coach Bent 574 just joined the IB board today. Thank you. Welcome aboard. What are your thoughts on writers swapping out their predictions on their sites days before a kid makes his official announcement? I think it's garbage.
Yeah.
For two reasons.
It should stay. When you put it in, that's all it is.
You should get, to me, one change, and it can't be within like a certain number of time before his commitment, right? And you can't, once a kid has set a commitment date, you can't change it. So so Sullivan Absher locks in May 13th. You can't change it. Cause what ticks me off is you get all these guys going this run. So like, you know, someone that covers the kids recruitment will do a crystal ball, and then like the Rutgers site and then the Iowa site and then the Washington State site and all these people make their predictions so they can get their score up. And it's like, you know, someone's like, oh, so-and-so has a 95%. No, he doesn't. He changes the guy changes it before the kid commits, when everybody knows where a kid's going to go. And that's garbage to me. So not only is it like give you an accurate representation of a guy's prediction model, like I had somebody say, well, you know, so-and-so is really good at predicting guys going to the like, based on what was present. No, because he changes it, right? Like guy had this the whole time until everybody knew it was going to be this. So he changed it. That doesn't tell me anything. And you know, and then there's a part that I hate, Ryan, that it's the whole you're taking a kid's moment. Like, there's no doubt where Sullivan Absher is going to go at this point in time. There was not a question. There was no question about who Devin Houston was picking on the 7th. And I don't love that. I don't love that. And that's what I dislike about the crystal balls. And that's why we don't do it. We don't do something like that. It's just
their rating should be at least knocked somehow. Right. If you do a last minute switch, like there should be some deduction or something. Right. It's very misleading to your point. There is like, yes, I mean, especially a kid that's involved with Notre Dame, right? Like leading up to it a couple of days beforehand, we know where they're going. So that's not, you didn't predict anything. Like you knew what the outcome was going to be. Right. So that your rating should definitely be affected somehow if you're doing something like that. There's no doubt.
Yep. All right. Here's from
or maybe it's like weighted. So I'm just like thinking out loud. Maybe it's
It is kind of weighted to further out that you make your prediction, the more points you get. So that's why people throw out these super early predictions, because they're like, well, you know, this is going to happen then. So I'm going to throw it in now because this is where I think it's trending. And then I can always change it later. Mm-hmm. So I think if you do it later, you're going to, you know, yeah, there's a lot of different things, but they're not doing it for accuracy, or they're doing it for clicks. That's the reason they do it. It's all about page views. It is primarily a advertising revenue operation, and that's why they do it. And like, I've known writers that work for 247 that hate doing it, but they have to. It's part of, you know, and that's the nice thing for us. Is like, what I love about SI is they don't tell us to do anything. Just put out quality content, put out good journalism, put out good analysis, and, you know, have some integrity and make us money, right? That's it, right? And, you know, it's never been like, hey, man, you should put this kind of stuff out because it's super clickbaity. Like, they've never said that to me. Maybe they say that to others. I don't know. I don't think so, because they don't say it to me. And they let us do our thing, whereas, like, you know, guys at Irish Illustrated, like, you know, Priester and O'Malley, like, you know, everybody knows I'm fond of those guys and all that, but like the reality is they're partnered with a bigger organization that to a degree says this is the kind of, we need some of this kind of stuff and you have to put it out. Now, fortunately for them, they don't have to do as much of that. Some of the, you know, the recruiting operation does some of that because it's just more geared towards that. But, you know, it's one of the reasons that's just not an organization I'd want to work for. I'm not talking about Irish Illustrated. I'm talking about 247. Same thing with like Rivals. I had my fill working for a company like that. Hard pass moving forward. Here's a question from Red Text Run. Dane Chris' name is always overlooked when big-time quarterback recruits are discussed. How is he perceived as a prospect, and why didn't he pan out? It's a big-time prospect. There were some people I knew that actually thought he was going to be better than Jimmy Clausen because he was 6'5", he was 230, he was a good athlete, and he had a bazooka for an arm. The problem with Dane was a few things. Number one is he had a super long release that he couldn't control his release point, which created some inaccuracy. There would be times, I think of the Hail Mary head at the end of the Michigan game that he literally threw into the stands just because he couldn't control his arm strength. And he had a long release, so the ball would come out late at times, and he wasn't super accurate. Because the key to being an accurate quarterback is, can you control your release point? And that, to me, is the most important thing, because you can have all the feet and everything, but if you can't control your release point, you're not going to be an accurate thrower. You're not going to be an accurate pitcher. It's all about the release point.
That's why hand size is so important. Sorry not to cut you off.
Right. No, it's very true. And the guys like Michael Vick are the anomalies when it comes to that, right? That's the concern. And so when you look at Dane, that hurt him. I don't think he ever quite got down progressions super fast, because I don't think he had a ton of experience when he got to Notre Dame. The knee injury hurt him. I thought Dane did some good things up until the knee injury. He was not the same player when he was coming back. But, I mean, I've had people say, you know, Dane, Chris was terrible. I was like, yeah, you need to go back and watch the Michigan and Michigan State game in 2010, because Dane was pretty flipping good in those two games. And all I know is when he got hurt in 2010 against Michigan, Notre Dame had a lead and was outplaying Michigan. When he got hurt, they weren't anymore. You know what I mean? And, you know, I Michigan State game, he had 32 completions, 369 yards, 4 touchdowns. He had 304 yards against Stanford. Didn't play great in that game. I thought he played well against Michigan State or Western Michigan, 255 yards, 3 touchdowns. And then he played really terrible against Navy. And then he got hurt against Tulsa, and he was never the same guy after that.
Did that knee injury hurt his athlete? Was he a good athlete coming out?
He wasn't as athletic, he wasn't as mobile, yeah. But we never saw him. I mean, he only started one game after that, and he got benched at halftime. So I don't know. And I think by the time he got to Kansas, his confidence was just completely shot. I mean, he wasn't the same kid. But I think the final piece that really hurt Dane more than anything was playing for Charlie Molnar and Brian Kelly. It was just bad combination. Charlie Molnar is one of the worst coaches I've ever seen in my life. And when you are the worst quarterback coach at Notre Dame of the last 15 years, that's bad, because that means you're competing with Mike Sanford. And to be worse than Mike Sanford is bad. And he was worse than Mike Sanford, because at least Mike Sanford was a decent guy, you know, at least to me. but he's just a bad coach. Charlie Mulner was not only a bad coach, he was an a-hole. And and some of the stories I've heard from some of the UMass players is pretty appalling. There's a reason Charlie Mulner is not coaching at this level anymore. Michael Rice, do you think we will go more up-tempo this year? Kelly did it at Cincinnati, but not at Notre Dame. OSU does it, and I see advantages. Michael, I think it's one of those things. Ryan, I want to get your thoughts on this. I'm a big believer that I think up-tempo works if that's who you are. I'm someone who doesn't believe that there's like one way to do it. I think there's advantages to up-tempo. Absolutely. There's been times in the past, especially last year, where I thought it was a huge advantage. And that's why I pushed for tempo, Michael, because like you had an offensive line that couldn't pass pro for a pro-style offense. Pro-style offense has to have some level of five-step drop and play action to really be effective. And you need certain concepts, Ryan, that are a little bit more, you know, developing and some different ideas. And if you can't pass pro, you can't run that offense. And so I thought last year, Michael, that there should have been more tempo. And then they went to that later. They did a little bit more. They weren't like pushing the tempo, but they went a little quicker. And I thought it worked for them. I think in an offense like North Carolina, you have to have some tempo for that air raid to work. I don't think you can run an air raid in a normal snap the ball at 5 seconds thing. It just doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And so I also think there's some disadvantages to being in a tempo offense. So I think I could sit here and I could tell you, we could talk for 10 minutes about why going tempo is a bad idea. And then we could spend the next 20 minutes talking about why it's a good idea. And then we could do the same thing with pro style, right? And in a more methodical approach. I'm a little bit of an in-between kind of thing. Like I like, for me personally, I would be more of a pro style guy with a little bit of a sense of urgency to it, right? So like I want to get lined up. I want to see what they're doing. I want to be able to come out and do that at times. But I also like the idea of being able to motion and shift and mix up personnel and doing things like that, which you can't really do in a tempo offense. It's just you just line up and you can maybe make one motion and then you go. You know, so I'm a bit of a traditionalist in what I personally like. I also think for Notre Dame, they can recruit to that a little bit better. I think that type of offense fits tight ends better than an air raid, which is geared more towards the Mark Andrews type of tight ends. I don't think it's necessarily as effective for a Michael Mayer type of tight end, if that makes sense. It doesn't mean you can't be effective. It just, I think it's better. So I think it fits the personnel a little bit better. But what it comes down to at the end of the day, Michael, is you have to decide what you want to be. Do you want to be about tempo and space and doing all that kind of stuff, which is going to have to be gear your offense one way, or do you want to be more about precision? And I think Notre Dame cares more about precision. I think Tommy Reese is more of a pro-style guy, that it's more about, I don't need to run 90 plays. I want to run 65 at a very efficient level where we're trying to maximize what we're doing. I think both of them work if you have the right coach. It's the same thing with defense. I don't care if you're a 3-4, 4-3, 4-2-5, 3-3-5. If you know it, and if you can coach it and teach it, and if you can recruit to it, it can be effective, you know, and that's part of the reason I don't believe in the Veer, because I don't think you can recruit to it to win championships, right? Like, I just, like, what big-time players are going to want to run the Veer? I think it's hard to recruit coaches to it because there just aren't a lot of Veer. I mean, it's practically speaking, they're just, nowadays, it's just harder to go find a coach that can coach the Veer because they've never coached it before. It's just not a prominent thing. You can find air raid coaches anywhere, you know, but pro style coach anywhere, because there's so much carryover to it and coaching the air raid. And if you're a receivers coach and you're coaching the air raid, you don't have to be a genius. It's pretty simple, you know? But if you're going to be a receivers coach, coaching a pro style offense, like Holman Wiggins was at Alabama. So I liked him. If you look at Jamarcus Shepherd at Purdue, those are guys running pro style offenses, meaning their receivers have to know like 20 plus different route options in the style of their offense. And so I just think it depends on who you want to be. I don't think this year for Notre Dame, they're going to be a tempo team. I think not being able to go tempo would be a mistake. You have to have that in your hand. Like, man, they're just kicking our butt and they got our number. So you know what we're going to do this next series? We're going to come out and we're going to go.
Yeah.
I think you got to have that in your tool bag. I don't think it needs to be who you are all the time. And so I think it's easier for a pro style team to speed up than it is for a tempo team to slow down. And so that's kind of my thought. So I don't think they're going to be more tempo. I think they're going to prefer precision over tempo this year. Execution over tempo is what I think that they're going to do.
Well, I think identity is obviously very important. I mean, that is, you know, understanding of what you are and what you do best. I think it also depends a little bit on the situation, the team that you're playing, right? It's like if you're playing a defense where you know they're down a couple players and they do not have much depth to it, then you might want to tempo them a little bit because you're going to tire them out a ton. If you're going against an offense on the other side that is a potent offense, I might want to slow the pace down a little bit to make sure that my defense is not on the field a ton. I might want to work the clock a little bit. I mean, when you look at deciding factors in a football game, time of possession is usually a really big parameter to who wins a football game. It's usually very important. That field position, like those are some of the things that really kind of come to the winning formula to a degree. So I believe that you can win in both ways. I believe, though, that it's very dependent on who you're playing. There's a lot of factors into whether, but I agree with you to the simple fact that you need to have it possible, right? To be the best team, you need to work at different paces. Like there's not one pace, in my opinion. You need to be able to work different opportunities from different levels, because there's going to be times where you need pace. There's going to be times where you need to slow things down. I think it has to be in your pocket, but I think it's largely dependent on who you're playing against. I think that those factors kind of come into play as well.
I would say this too, Michael. I do think it was a mistake for Brian Kelly not to go tempo for the first 7 years of his career. The problem they got into is they were structurally built like the tempo team he was in Cincinnati. But they weren't practically that. So, Ryan, they would line up in 11. I remember, I think it was 2015, 2016, something like they were 11 personnel, like 80, like almost 90% of their snaps. It was insane how much. And they would just line up in almost the same formations. And so, like, that's fine if you're an air raid team or you're a tempo team, because you're not allowing the defense to run a lot. But when, and this hurt them in 2015 as well, when you're going slow and you're basically lining up in the same position formation all the time, it's easy for the defense to do all types of different things to you, and you're just lining up the same way. And I think that's why if you're going to be a pro-style team where you're going to snap the ball, you know, with less than 15 and sometimes even 10 seconds on the clock, you have to give them something to think about. Mm-hmm. And that's what they never did. So you can't do it that way. You can't go pro-style that way either. That was a mistake. But if you watch Tommy Rees last year, especially in the year, they don't just line up and do that. They line up, they shift, they motion, they make checks, they do all types of things. And I think that works better. And then they'll still snap the ball sometimes at 20 seconds plus seconds left on the clock. So yeah. I think you need that nice balance. But I love the question because I love it whenever we can kind of nerd out on the show. So like when people ask questions that like that, it just makes me very, very happy. Rob Dinoff, Brian and Vince, and Ryan. What are your thoughts on the 2016 ESPN 30 for 30 Catholics versus Convicts? I thought it was well done, but I heard some players were irritated that they were left out of the documentary. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
I thought it was good until the end. And what I mean by that is I got really annoyed with the whole sanctimonious. It wasn't nice. It was mean. They're not all convicts. Miami played that up back then. Like, don't get mad that everybody thinks you're this way when you act that way and you want people to think that about you.
They relished in it,
they
too.
They relished it at the time. So, yeah. Like, they're all acting all silly. Leon, seriously, oh, hurt my feelings. You guys relished that at the time. You wanted to be the bad boys. That's why you hated Notre Dame, because you thought they were the nice guys, right? So, like, getting, like, Chuck Todd in there, it's like, well, what does he have to do with any of this stuff? Like, was he on the team? No, shut up. You know, Dan Le Batard, I don't care what Dan Le Batard thinks about anything. I just want to watch a stupid show, you know?
That's funny.
And so it's like that annoyed me, right? Like they should have only interviewed players and coaches and people that were around. Like, you know, they interviewed the one guy that was ESID at Miami. I thought he brought a unique perspective of like what, you know, that's fine. But there was people that they were interviewing on the Miami side that it's like, why are we talking about this? But I thought other than that, the rest of it was great. Like, you know, the Miami players whining about Cleveland Gary being in. And then Notre Dame's like, well, wait a minute. What about this play to Brown? What was it? Was it Eddie Brown? I always forget which.
Eddie Brown, yeah.
Eddie Brown.
Yep.
He never caught the ball on the touchdown that gave Miami a chance to tie the game. Right? So it's like, you know, I mean, that shouldn't have counted either. So it just it was really well done in that regard. And then the backstory on the shirts and the trouble the guy got in and all that kind of stuff, I thought that was pretty cool, right? Yeah. And what led to that rivalry, I thought there was great backstory to it. Like, it was really well done, other than that, gee, this was mean type of thing at the end. Like, come on, give me a break. I'm supposed to feel sorry for Miami players. Come on, guys.
You know, I enjoyed it. Rob, I would say, who were some of the players that were irritated, if you don't mind me asking? You can just give a couple people. I hadn't heard about that. Yeah.
So be curious to hear that as well. But I thought that's the one thing ESPN does really well. I don't know if there's a 30 for 30 I've seen that I didn't like. Even ones that are about sports, I have no interest in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did you ever see the one about the Pablo Escobar and the Escobar for the Venezuelan team?
I think so.
The soccer team. It was.
I think so. Really well I think done. I've seen almost every one of them.
Yeah,
I mean, they're all really,
really
good.
Well done.
Yeah,
the 83 draft one. It wasn't a 30 for 30, but the thing ESPN did on the 83 quarterback draft was phenomenal.
You know,
phenomenal. And yes,
you know which one I really liked was I think they did a 30 for 30 on Marcus Dupree, didn't they?
The best running back ever. Yeah,
that was a good one. Yeah,
extremely well done. Yes, yeah. Extremely well done. The Pony XS was also really well done.
Great
really,
one.
Really well done. Gabe Weiss, if Freeman has success in Notre Dame, do you think this is a retirement job for him? Would an offer from Ohio State be too much to pass up? I think he's truly fallen in love with Notre Dame. I don't worry about that. I don't worry about him leaving Notre Dame for Ohio State. I don't see that. I think, you know, could it be a retirement job for him? Sure. But the hard part for that is he's so young.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's here 15 years, he's still almost a decade younger than what Brian Kelly is right now.
Right.
Right. Like, so I don't think it's going to, because the heirs of the Joe Paternos, number one, that's never existed at Notre Dame. Like, Newt Rockne, I think, was the longest tenured coach at like, what, 13 years? And they were only playing like 8-9 games in most years back then, like 9-10 sometimes. But you just don't see the Joe Paternos at Notre Dame. You don't see the Bobby Bowens at Notre Dame. It's just a different kind of job. But, and I definitely don't think we see that now. Like, people are talking about, like, you know, Dabo's career, like, you know, it's time for, and he's been there like what, 15 years?
Like, something what,
like 07, 16 years? It's not even like even coming close to what Paterno was. So I don't think it's going to be a retirement job for him just because he's 36 years old. Think about it. If he coaches 20 years at Notre Dame, he's still 5 years younger than what Brian Kelly was when he left after 12.
He'd be 14 years younger than Pete Carroll is right now as well.
So I think what could happen is, if like he has the kind of success that would make him a lifer, he'd probably use that to maybe get an NFL job. I think once he's kind of like gotten everything to get out of Notre Dame, you know, they've won a couple titles and then they've built this great program, you know, okay, now I want to go be a dad, you know, and it's easier to do that in the NFL now than it is in college football. So I could see something like that way down the road.
I wonder who's the longest tenured in college right now. Is it Kirk Ferentz? Might be. I don't know.
I think it has to be.
Has to be.
I mean, he's
at least in Power Five, right? I mean,
yeah. I'm actually look it up. See, Google can be your friend. Longest tenured college football coaches.
I know. I love Google.
Kirk Ferentz.
I love that we have so much information on our fingertips, but then it also does kind of kill conversation sometimes.
This is also true. let's see here. 2007, 2006.
Because Chris Ault was there forever. Ferentz. But,
1998, Kirk Ferentz. Next closest was Gary Patterson, but he's gone now.
Yep.
And then the second most tenured coach is Kyle Whittingham.
Nice.
Because according to this 2021 article, it was Ferentz, then Patterson, and then Utah hired Whittingham, and Ohio U hired Frank Solich in the same year. Frank Solich has since retired. And then the next longest, most tenured coach after Whittingham is Mike Gundy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's been there a long time. Yeah.
And then the next longest tenured Power Five coach is Pat Fitzgerald. That's what I'm saying, y'all. Like, you just don't have the Joe Paternos and the Bobby Bowdens anymore. I just don't see that. I don't see that being the case anymore.
Yep.
I really don't. Garen Knutson, what kind of message is sent to Clemson if we get a clean sweep in their territory? Does that create stress within their foundation?
Yes. I mean, I wrote an article about this, right? And So the big targets that Notre Dame is trying to get out of the Carolinas this year are offensive linemen, right? So obviously they got Sam Pendleton. We feel good about their chances with Sullivan Apture later this afternoon. So if they go and get they get both those kids, and then they go and they close the deal with a Monroe Freeling, it's monumental because they got three of their top offensive line targets, and they just happen to come out of the Carolinas. But in a sense, right, you should beat Clemson for offensive linemen. I know the proximity thing comes into the conversation, but it's big in the fact that you went to the Carolinas. That's right. More than anything. It's not the position. Right. It's the fact that you went into the Carolinas and you got your three top targets. That would be the monumental part of it.
Right. Yes. If they're recruiting outside of the region, Notre Dame should beat Clemson more often than not. It's the local part. And I think it's also, it's you know, they have a first-year coach, and it's kind of like, okay, there's going to be a lot of question marks about whether or not he's able to recruit. Because I don't think, like, a buddy of mine sent me a link to a Clemson board and thread on 247, and he let me borrow his password because, like, you just got to read this. And there was, like, one guy that, like, had any clue of why Notre Dame's having success recruiting offensive linemen. Like, the rest of the board had, like, no concept of why are these offensive linemen going to Notre Dame? They had no concept. I'm like, y'all act like Harry Hiestand left in 04. Right? Like, it wasn't that long ago. There's still dudes on the roster he recruited. Like, you know, no concept. Because what I have learned in the last 5 years especially, but in the last couple of years, there are so many football fans that don't pay attention to anything but their team in Alabama. That's it. And, like, you actually have to have someone go on the thread and, like, list this long list of NFL players that Harry Hiestand, you know, developed at Notre Dame. And people are like, wow, I had no idea. Like, it just makes no sense to me. But there's a lot of concern about, I mean, look, Dabo hired a lot of unproven coaches. I mean, it was like 3 years ago, his defensive coordinator was like a personal assistant to Bruce Arians in Arizona, like 4 years ago, right? I mean, his O-line coach was not a full-time assistant last year. You know, he went out and hired a lot of unproven coaches, and it's either going to work great or it's going to be his undoing. And I don't know which one it's going to be, but, you know, I also think it's kind of a wake-up call to Clemson. Like, y'all don't carry as much regional weight as you think you do. And I think it's going to be a bit of a wake-up call because it's kind of like your last title was an 18. You're kind of getting to the point where, like, nobody's left from that team anymore, coaching-wise or player-wise. And if you don't get back to that soon, you're going to kind of fall by the wayside because you don't have the long-term stability of your program, Ryan, in my opinion, where you can be a Bama or an Ohio State where you can kind of overcome a couple down years because you've won so much for decades. Clemson right. hadn't really been a national powerhouse since the early 80s. Like, I was a baby, mm-hmm. a toddler, the last time Clemson was any kind of power like that. And so, you know, I do think there's always been some skepticism like, well, can they really keep this thing going?
The staying power.
Yeah, this year is going to be important for that. If they have another year like last year, then I think there's going to be a lot of questions about that. And it's going to hurt their recruiting.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Michael Rudiger. We had an article about at Irish Breakdown today, Ryan, where I talked about the possibility of Zeke Correll, his breakout this spring, sort of presenting their name with some options of mm-hmm. how to formate their line. And what we talked about a couple weeks ago was when you talk about how to figure out the best five and how they all fit together, you've got a very interesting issue at center, because Zeke Curl had a great spring and we've seen him, you know, say he's one of your best five, but you've seen him at guard and it wasn't pretty.
Right.
And you have to decide, was it coaching? Was he injured? Like, what's the issue? You don't know what he can be. And then you've got this guy that's about to be a 4-year starter at center, team captain, leader, all these other things, who you and I think both believe in college could play all five positions at a very high level.
Yep.
And the number of guys who can play five positions on the offensive line at a high level, you probably count on one hand. Mm-hmm. Jarrett Patterson's one of them, in my opinion. So do you move that 3-year starter, going to be 4-year starter, away from center, who's a leader and a captain, to make room for Zeke? Is Zeke that far ahead of the other guys? Do you try to move Zeke again and maybe mess with him again? It's a little bit of a challenging decision. It's not as easy as people think. And from what our sources are telling us, we believe that they're going to make that they are leaning towards, if they haven't already made the decision, of moving Patterson out to guard and starting Zeke Curl. So the question that Michael has, and you're going to have an article about this tomorrow, you've already sent to me, I'm going to edit it and publish it tomorrow, is what does that mean for Jarrett Patterson's draft stock? So Michael asked the question. Ryan, I'll let you answer it.
Yeah, I mean, Michael, at this point, Jarrett Patterson has 3 years of film at center, right? So if a team wants to draft him at center, they have the film to back that up of what he looks like as a center at a high level, too, at a lot of points in his career. The big bonus to him playing guard is, one, guards typically just make more money than centers. Center is kind of the devalued position up front in the NFL.
It's kind of weird.
It is kind of weird. I know. I always thought, like, left tackle, right tackle, center. Like, that would be kind of my hierarchy of offensive line. But for whatever reason, the money talks, and guards make more money than centers on the next level. So the thought that he could maybe potentially play guard helps him from a money perspective, right? If a team says, wow, you look great at guard, I'm going to draft you to play guard, that's fantastic. But then the other thing is, so now we have, he could play center, maybe he could play guard. If he could do both of those things, you make yourself more valuable. And then the other sense of, we all think, and I mean, I can at least speak for myself, I think Jarrett Patterson is going to be a starter long-term on the NFL level, whether that is at center or at guard. But
assuming he stays healthy.
But if it's the worst case scenario and he's just a backup type swing player inside, the more you can do makes you way more valuable, because those guys on the next level that are the depth pieces to an offensive line group have the ability to back up multiple positions. So if he can be a solid player at guard at least, or maybe a good player at guard and be a good player at center, that makes you just all the more valuable. And that's the sticking point. That's how you really last long term on a roster if you are not a starter. But I think it does help you. And I mean, honestly, I don't think there's any negative to it, because it's not like he doesn't have a ton of film at center. He has a ton of film. If he's not a great guard, okay, a team's going to draft him at center. If he's a great guard, they might make himself more valuable. So I don't think there's any drawback to from a draft perspective. I'm not, and I talked to Brian about this. It makes me uneasy moving a 3-year starter at a position to a position for 1 year. It does, in a vacuum. But if that's your best five, that's your best five, point blank, period. And from an NFL draft perspective, I don't think it hurts Jarrett at all.
I think as far as your best five, I've always said the notion that you're just going to play your five best linemen is just not a reality, because you have to pick your best five that can play together as your best five. And I've said this before. If you have five Zeke Curls, your five best players, that's not going to be a great starting offensive lineman, because those guys aren't going to be good at tackle, right? But you have to look at it and say, okay, we know that Zeke can play center. We know that Jarrett can play center. So you have to ask yourself, am I more confident that Jarrett can move out to guard and be successful than I am Zeke? Yeah, I am. And that's why I think at the end of the day, I'd be okay with that decision, because because we talked about this before you got on the show, Ryan. Like, he's really long. I mean, you don't see centers with Jarrett's length. And that's why I've always felt he could play tackle. That's why I thought, the best thing that for his draft stock would have been to move him out to tackle last year. And I mean, you know, it worked out well that they didn't. I think the only thing I'll say as a drawback is I don't think it's as easy to just dismiss a down year as if it doesn't hurt him. I do think it hurts him, because if he doesn't struggle a guard, then that pigeonholes him to center. And I think that could hurt his draft stock. Because like you said, right now, if you need a guard, you can draft Jarrett Patterson. If you need a center, you can draft Jarrett Patterson, assuming he has a good year guard. Whereas if he struggles a guard, you're like, well, you know, guy's a fifth-year senior. He started a lot of football. Like, it's not like you moved him to tight end. Like, this guy should have made a smooth transition.
Yeah.
I just don't see that happening. I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think Jarrett Patterson is going to thrive at guard. As long, the only concern I have about Jarrett Patterson is health. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's the only one. Because, you know, 2 years ago he had the season-ending injury on his foot, and then this offseason he's had the pec injury. And they're both kind of freaky. Like, you know, one he got stepped on, I think, and then the other one is, you know, torn pec is a weird thing. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Very, very interesting. Very, very good questions here so far. Here's a good question from Gabe Weiss. Would you rather have this year's staff or last year's staff, but Brian Kelly has Charlie Weiss's recruiting prowess and want to? I'd still want this year's staff.
That's a no-brainer for me. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I would still want Marcus Freeman as the head coach. Right. I mean, there's just – I'm good. I'm good with where they are now.
I'll take his recruiting prowess over Charlie's, right? I mean
– Yes, because Charlie was great at recruiting offensive players. He wasn't great at recruiting defensive players. Now, we don't know for sure that this staff's going to be great at recruiting offensive players. They're not there yet, but they're trending in the right direction. So we'll have to see. Jared Rhodes. Brian, everything is trending up with next year's class. A lot to be excited about. Going a little negative. What are the question marks or points of concern moving forward? It's a good one, Ryan. Do you want to? So, are we talking recruiting or team? I'm taking this as a recruiting team. Question.
Are you okay? See, question?
Yeah, because I mean, he started off with next year's class. So let's go both. Mm-hmm. I think recruiting wise, we've discussed a little bit. The offense still needs to fill up, right?
Sure.
We both feel good about where they are with Monroe Freeling, but if you miss him, you're not getting a pure left tackle in this class, and that's a little bit of a concern.
Right.
Receiver. They got a lot of guys on the board, but do you land your 4, 5, and 6 guys, or do you land a couple from your top 3 to 4? Those are question marks.
Sure.
And then defensively, it's corner. I mean, they don't have been in the class from corner. Those are the bigger question marks.
Yeah.
And team-wise, Ryan, when you look at this team, what are the first couple things that immediately pop up in your head when you think of what could keep this team from taking the next jump?
Injuries at the skill positions, one that pops up, right? Because it's just just injuries at wide receiver, I guess, in general, because there's just such a lack of depth right now. I mean, quarterback not taking a step forward would be another one. And then, I mean, outside of that, there's nothing that's like, I mean, other than that, honestly, it's the special teams for me. Like, I'm just like, what's the kicking game going to look like? Is the punting going to be consistent? I have a lot of question marks about the kicking game, punting game right now.
I think quarterback obviously is still an unproven commodity. I love the talent there and the potential, but it's still an unproven commodity. Receiver is a big question mark. I mean, this class is going to have to fill out, and then can they do it year after year? Because Jancy Stuckey is walking into a hot mess from a depth standpoint. And I still think the secondary's got to get better. I still think they have good secondary talent. I think it needs to get better to consistently be that team that's competing for championships. Because if you get into a game against Bama and they're able to slow your pass rush down, you're done. Done. And that's a problem. And that's an area that's got to get better. So I think those, to me, are the point. And I like the coaching. I think Mike Mickens is a very good football coach. But can Mike Mickens recruit the talent to Notre Dame the way that he needs to? I think he's improved it, right? Certainly. I mean, again, I think Mickey and Morrison, and you've never really responded to this, so I'd kind of be curious to your answer on this. To me, it's the best 1-2 punch they've signed at corner since, again, as far as high school recruits. Because obviously, the Troy Pride, Julian Love turned out to be a great corner tandem, but nobody thought they were going to be that when they signed. And I graded them both as 4 stars, and I didn't think they were going to be that good, especially Love. But to me, it's the best, from a recruiting standpoint, the best 1-2 punch they've signed since T. Shepherd and Kavari Russell in 2012. But there's still another level I think they can get to and they need to get to from a consistency standpoint, where if you're signing that to every year, I'm fine. I don't kiss is whenever Smitty and I disagree a little bit. Like, Notre Dame's just not going to go get the 5-star corners very often. It's just not going to happen very often. But if you give me a Jaden Mickey and a Benjamin Morrison every year, I'm okay with that. Right. As long as your D line is still doing what they're doing. So but I still do think it needs to do it consistently. You can't just do it once every 3 or 4 years. It has to be consistently letting good football players a corner and safety as well. I think those two positions are still the biggest concern for me. And if they don't get Dante Moore in 2023, quarterback becomes a problem, because Tyler Buchner is, you know, he's going into year two. He burned eligibility as a freshman, as he should have. He's not a 5-year guy, most likely. and the injury history, right? And he's only had the one big one, but the point about the injury history is not the injury history being the concern, but if he has an injury, you know, I don't know how much longer Drew Pine, I mean, Drew Pine's probably going to be on pace to graduate after this year.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's not the starting quarterback, I guarantee he will not leave until he graduates. But after he graduates, all bets are off. And he was an early enrollee, so he may be on pace to graduate this year. So mm-hmm. that would be the other one for me. If they don't land Dante Moore, then my concern level goes way higher.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, speaking to the secondary, it's a good mention. That's one of the positions where, I mean, corner and wide receiver, I feel like has been a talking point from a fan perspective for a while, right? Like that's where you need to improve to go against the Bamas of the world, right? Like, I mean, I think you saw when they played Alabama a couple years ago in the playoff, I mean, there was just an obvious athleticism difference between Devonta Smith and everybody else in the secondary. I mean, it was very, very noticeable. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, I think the talent's there, though. I don't think it's a talent issue as much as, I mean, it's a depth issue to a degree, especially at wide receiver. But I think the talent's there. It's just about developing that talent, obviously. But, I mean, it has to be better. It does. I mean, I think somebody said in the chat, like, it seems like in every big game that the secondary doesn't play well. And I don't think that that's 100% accurate. But I would say that there's definitely deficiencies that get taken against the better teams. Like, there's no doubt.
Because here's the thing, and people will say the 18 secondary didn't play well because they'll point to the touchdowns late, but it was one guy got hurt and it changed mm-hmm. everything.
Yeah.
And that's the depth issue that you talked about. That's the problem. It's like, you know, Bama can lose a corner and still go out and beat Cincinnati convincingly, right? Notre Dame can't in those kind of games. Maybe Cincinnati, but not normal playoff teams. So I think that's where the depth piece comes in. And I do think the talent's got to get better. You should never be in a situation in Notre Dame where you're having to play Clarence Lewis as a freshman or a sophomore. I don't think they recruited Clarence Lewis thinking they were going to have to play him as a freshman and sophomore. And that's a concern for me.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one. Gabe Weiss, who is the GOAT, greatest of all time, of Notre Dame football players, regardless of position?
Ever?
I mean, man. Yeah, that's an interesting one.
I feel like we need to go position by position almost. Like, it's so tough to quantify one guy as the GOATs, right? Yeah. I mean, guys that popped in my head are like Tim Brown, Quentin Nelson.
I'd have to find somebody that like won a title. That would be my only cap. You know, it's like, here's the thing. Here's why, you know, I wanted to bring it up because it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, how am I supposed to compare George Gipp to Rocket Ismail?
Right.
Like, how am I supposed to do that? Now, I mean, George Gipp still has records at Notre Dame. Dude averaged over 8 yards a carry 1 year. You know what I mean? Like, it was nuts. But, like, how am I supposed to compare that to, you know, what guys did today? He averaged 8.1 yards per carry in his last year. He had 827 rushing yards. You know, he also completed 30 passes for 708 yards. Through 9 interceptions. Like, how am I supposed to compare that? So that's what I say. The greatest of all time arguments to me are never overly productive because it's just so hard to compare eras.
And to your point, I mean, for a long time, Notre Dame was a triple option offense. So how do we compare Brady Quinn to Tony Rice, right? Like, it's just
Tony Rice was a Heisman runner up in a year where he threw 2 touchdown passes and 9 picks.
Right.
It's just different eras, you know? So who's the greatest of all time? I mean, I'd have to go back and look at the eras where they were winning championships and see who they're like, I'd have to pick someone off that 40, that mid 40s team that like went 4 years and never lost a game, you know, 1-3 and who was their best player then, you know? We should have a show where we just have everybody give their answers and reasons for it. That would be really fun.
I mean, that's why we have a message board, right?
Exactly.
Great topic.
Great one, Ryan. Well done, my friend. Ian Johnson, is the staff looking to only add one corner this class and get numbers for 24? It seems like there's a ton of offers out for next year and doesn't seem like we're doing that well for 23.
I mean, I think they would like to take two, right? I mean, in 2023.
They need to.
I mean, I don't think it's definitely – Ian, I think that you're loading up because cornerbacks are just a very important position nowadays, right? So they want to make sure that they're doing due diligence in 2024. But, I mean, you can tell the corner board in 2023 is expanding, though, too. Like, let's not look past that at this point as well. So, yeah, you need to get two. I mean, whether that is Christian Gray, one of the Micahs, kid they just offered out of Texas who we reported is going to be visiting soon. Like there's guys on the board, and
Calvin Simpson Hunt,
who's a really talented player. They also just offered
Josiah Wagner, who I know you like.
Yes. Yep.
So they're trying to get guys. And I also think, right, it's May 13th. We're still 8 months away from the first signing day and 10 months away from the second one, or 9 months away from the second one. So I think it's a little too early to say we're not doing well. There's guys they're in on. And all the guys we just mentioned are top 200 players. So, you know, they're not like going to the – well, let's go sign, Lo Wood or Spencer Boyd or something like that mold yet. They're not there yet.
I can't believe you just threw shade at Lo Wood.
I know. I like Lo Wood, but you're not winning a championship with Lo Wood. There's a really good question from Connor O'Doherty, and I think this is – I want to have a Blue Bloods conversation one of these days, and now we don't really have time for it now, but I want to get there at some point in time. I'm going to mark that one down for one to talk about. That'd be a fun summer one. Brandon Plensner says, what do you see from Benjamin Morrison that makes you so high on him? Because we were talking earlier how I said I think he's a top 100 player. The question was, Ryan, who has the highest upside on corner at corner outside of Cam Hart? Mm-hmm. And I said of the guys currently on the roster, I'd probably go with Ryan Barnes. If not him, Jaden Mickey.
That's fair.
If you then include Benjamin Morrison, who will show up this summer because he's currently not on the team yet. If you look at him when he arrives this summer, then my answer is very clearly Benjamin Morrison. That's my
easy over Barnes, not close.
Easy over Barnes. Like I said, he's the best cornerback Notre Dame has signed since 2012, in my opinion, like just coming out of high school. Big Benjamin Morrison fan. So why? It's a good, very good question. Number one, I think he's very long. I think he's fast. I think he's athletic. I think he's got explosiveness to him. He's physical. And I think he has really good corner instincts. I think he's a guy that in high school did more off coverage, and you saw his route recognition, because that's something you don't always see from corners who are just super athletic. In high school, they just put them up at the line of scrimmage and say, you know, go lock dudes down. Now, you don't know what kind of instincts they have and feel for coverage. He's got a really high IQ. I think he's just got the total – like, there's nothing about his game other than I just don't see him playing a lot of press man that I don't love. I mean, he doesn't grade out very, very high. Mm-hmm. Again, size plus. I mean, he's 6 foot. I've talked to people in Notre Dame say, no, he's actually grown. He's 6'1". I don't know if he's 6'1". He's at least 6 foot. He's got well above average arm length. He's physical. He can run. He's got a great frame, great instincts. I mean, I just don't know what he's missing. I don't know what his game is missing. Now, clearly, I'm in the minority here. If you go look at his recruiting rankings, but those are the same people that ranked Sauce Gardner as like the 1,600 best player in the country. But I don't know what they see that I don't, or that Alabama doesn't, or that Washington didn't, or Notre Dame doesn't, because I know the Notre Dame staff is extremely high on Benjamin Morrison as well. So, Ryan, I'd be curious to kind of get your thoughts on number one, your thoughts on Benjamin Morrison, then answering the question I addressed to you earlier, which I never gave you a chance to answer, which is how do you stack up that 1-2 punch of Mickey and Morrison compared to past Notre Dame cornerback tandems coming out of high school?
Yeah, I mean, it's the best one that I can think of just off the top of my head. I mean, especially in recent years, I don't think it's actually particularly close. Well,
there's more years they have signed no corners than they have two really good ones in the last 5 years.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess just by default in that instance, right? Like, I mean, just off the top of my head, again, I feel like that's a pretty safe one. Morrison, for me, like I felt like he was a little different than what they've gotten at Washington at corner, honestly. Like, they obviously Washington was a big player for him, right? So like I think of him as a Jimmy, like I start thinking about the Jimmy Lake prototype, and they're usually getting guys like Byron Murphy or Trent McDuffie that came out this year that are a little bit shorter, but they're just really intelligent football players, right? And I think that Benjamin Morrison has that, but he brings a level of length that I don't feel like they don't usually get at the University of Washington. And I think he's a good all around athlete. So yeah, I think that he is. Again, I could have the conversation whether you think that Ryan Barnes or Morrison has a higher upside. I think that they both of them have a tremendous upside. And, I mean, the length that Barnes has is just silly stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I think, though, that overall Morrison's a more fluid athlete than Ryan Barnes and a little bit faster, too. So I think he has a higher athletic upside. But, yeah, I think that if he's not the second most talented corner on the roster, then he's third. Like, I think it's pretty easy for me in that sense.
I've always felt that Jimmy Lake would like bigger corners. I just don't think he was able to recruit them. And so he just made the most, like he went after the other guy. Like you look at like the Sidney Jones and the Jordan Millers are guys that he clearly pushed. Like, and it's not just that they recruited, but like early in their career, immediately they were getting a push. Like he really wanted to get those guys in the lineup. So he has had some longer guys like that. And I think a lot of
Kevin King
was a big one too. I just think it was a little harder for them to get those guys consistently.
That's fair.
That's what I think the issue was. But when he's had those guys, they've done very well. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what speaks volumes to him and his ability as a defensive backs coach is that he could recruit a Kevin King and a Jordan Miller who are polar opposites from Kyler Gordon and Trent McDuffie and still have the same level of success. That speaks to a guy that can coach DBs. Now, head coach and D coordinator, different conversation. Right. He's like Kerry Coombs from Ohio State. That guy should just be a DB coach. Just let him go coach DBs. Don't let him do anything else except DBs and recruit because he's not a D coordinator. But you know, sometimes you kind of get caught into those, but that's what I think of Benjamin Morrison. I graded him out as a top 100 recruit. I don't know if you're that high on him, Ryan, but I did. I loved his game. I loved the entire package. The DNA matters to a degree. It's like a intangible, but it's not a driving force. I don't just because a kid's good doesn't mean or dad's good doesn't mean the kid's going to be good.
It's a check though. Yeah. He's been around the game.
It does. And it's also a check. His offer list is a check, but it doesn't, I'm not high on him because Alabama and Washington like him. Alabama and Washington liking him the way they did confirms what I felt about him. And that's kind of how I view that one. So get the last couple before we get out of here, Ryan, here we go. Jacob Watson, would this potentially be the first year where Notre Dame gets players at every position of need where they close the gap? This is a great question. So
I mean,
quarterback, running back, receiver, tight end, O-line. So that we'll just make them more broad. D-line, linebacker, corner, safety. Is there a chance in this class that they get a kid in at every position where they close the gap?
Well, I mean, I guess we got to go by position, right? I mean, if you get a Dante Moore, which we still think they're in a good position for, that obviously closes the gap. Does the running back, do either one, like if they get Jaden Lamar, do you think that Irvin Jr. or Lamar close the gap in any way? Probably not, right?
No. I don't think so. No.
Yeah. Yeah. So but then wide receivers, I think, I mean, if they get a class.
They've already got one, in my opinion, a receiver.
Yeah. If they get Braylon James is a gap closer. But if you get also a Rodney Gallagher in the class potentially or a Jaden Greathouse and a, like that combination, then you definitely close the gap, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Cooper Flanagan's a good player. I don't know if I'd call him a gap closer, though. I think he's, I think he could be a good player at Notre Dame, but I don't think he's a difference maker, if that makes sense. So I would be a no for tight end. Offensive line, I mean, yeah, if they get Monroe Freeling, Charles Jagasaw, Sam Pendleton, Sullivan Absher, and then whoever the fifth is, yeah, that's a gap-closing class, in my opinion. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think Monroe Freeling is a gap-closer. I think Charles Jagasaw is a gap-closer. And I think at worst, Sam Pendleton's a really nice depth piece, and I think Sullivan Absher has starting upside too. So, yeah, that's a gap-closing class. Defensive line, absolutely. You have several gap-closers in that group. I think Drake Bowen's a gap closer at linebacker. I think that at corner, you don't have anything right now. So that's my biggest question mark is if they can find anybody in that regard. And then safety, you have a gap closer in Peyton Bowen, in my opinion.
I think there's some guys that get – there's gap closing guys at corner. And, again, we've defined gap closing means two different things. One is you close the gap in that you've made yourself better, right? And I think Micah Bell, Christian Gray, guys like that make Notre Dame better. They're not the same kind of gap closer like a Braylon James or better yet, a Dante Moore, a Monroe Freeling. Although that's more of a gap widening because that is one position where you obviously with Harry Hiestand, but you get the point, right? Like that Micah Bell's not in the same category as Keon Keeley. He's more in the same category as Devin Houston and Boubacar Traore and guys who are like, you know, you closed the gap, meaning you raised yourself up. Right. And then there's the guys that are just like, okay, you gave yourself a guy that's on that level. Some like Micah Bell is not necessarily a guy that makes you as good at Bama at corner, but it makes you better than you've been, which means you're closing the gap on Bama. Whereas a Dante Moore, a guy like that is you're getting a guy that is at Bama normally. And I think that's a big part of that. So I think that's kind of my answer to that. Chief Brody with a super chat. Thank you, Chief. I want to see some bombs from Tyler Buckner 12 this season. I do too, because that's the one thing I'm not completely sold that he can do, Brian. I mean, I think that's still, to me, the biggest question about Tyler Buckner is can he be a guy that can beat you consistently down the field?
Right.
That's a legitimate question. It's a very legitimate question.
Yeah, and I mean, with the running game that we think that they can have in Notre Dame this year, and the element that Tyler Buchner brings to that, I would think the play action game could be money this year, man. So that ability to push the ball down the field is going to be huge for Notre Dame, and if Buchner can do it, I think Notre Dame's going to be in for a very good season if that is something that he's able to do this year.
No doubt. We have a super chat from Garen Knutson. Thanks for the great show, guys. Show as always, IB and family. See y'all soon. And for some good news, God is good. Trust him. I agree with that sentiment completely. Mace AK, thank you very much for that, Garen. Very, very much. Mace AK says it best. Join the message board, everybody. Hit that like button. Hit the subscribe. Hit the notification bell. Share this podcast. Leave a 5-star review. And as always, go Irish. Thanks, everybody. And we will see you all literally very, very soon.